David mentioned Indian country, and in the
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
Law and regulations, and when at the same time they are also involved and engaged in resource development. And then the second part of that is how do tribal developments relate to NEPA, the National Environmental Protection Act?
Let me give you a limited understanding on the business development or the development of resources and the interest of the tribe in maintaining some controls on understanding. In 1982, the Sac and Fox tribe, and I'll give you a specific, over all of these years has had oil and gas production from tribally owned lands. The regulation of the lessor-lessee relationship has fallen largely to the United States. To my knowledge, the only tribe in the United States that has a tribal law that is in fact directed toward regulating the lessor-lessee relationship is the Sac and Fox Mineral Leasing Act of 1982, which dovetails with both the federal laws and the regulations that are provided. Now, the federal regulations provide that a tribe may supersede the secretary's regulations by the positive adoption of tribal law on the same subject. Sac and Fox did so. Now, let me tell you why they did that. They have been property owners and owners of interests in mineral production. And over the years, they had no idea how much they got or whether it was adequate, whether they got what was in their contract. They didn't have any idea. And the federal agency that was charged with executing the trust responsibility with respect to the production of minerals, et cetera, and who is to be there, who in fact is extracting the minerals, whether there have been assignments of those of the right to be present, whether trespassers are there, all of those things was regulated by someone else. In several years, they had people run for their tribal council under the theory that they were going to find out what happened to their mineral income, whether they were getting what they should have had and all these sort of things. Well, in 1982, one group finally said, we're going to find out. And so they passed a Business Corporation Act, which says that any corporation that does business within the jurisdiction of the tribe must register as a foreign corporation in the same way that it does with the state, and that they will be issued a charter of incorporation and authorization to do business within the Sac and Fox jurisdiction. Now, that's not a mouse that roared type deal, okay? It is practical to know what corporations are doing business within the tribe's jurisdiction on minerals, for instance, because if you have ever looked at the way that a oil and gas deal is financed, there are innumerable assignments of overriding interests and back-end interests, and they have all this nomenclature and names that goes along with how you finance a deal. There may be all kinds of people producing various kinds of minerals from property. The tribe doesn't have any idea who's there. There's a designation of operator. So the point being is that the tribe passed the Business Corporation Act that says that any corporation doing business within our jurisdiction must register. The second thing that they did, they passed the Mineral Leasing Act, which requires certain kind of reports and certain kind of responsibilities on any lessee of their property. And what's interesting about it is that the act itself that grants the lease, the question becomes is whose lease is it? Is it the Secretary of the Interior's lease or is it the tribe's lease? And the law itself says that the council speaking on behalf of the tribe will lease. However, and the secretary got into it under later kind of provisions. So that the tribe itself, the Sac and Fox tribe, took under its own initiative to begin to regulate the lessor-lessee relationship. Now, that flowed out of the fact that they believed that there were several saltwater injection wells that nobody knew existed. Now, saltwater injection is, you know, the separation between the oil and the salt water. They have to do something with it. So the choices are you spray it all over the ground out there, or you put it in wells, or you use it for something, so that there were environmental considerations in that. That became an interest in both the tribe regulating and knowing who is doing business, the conditions under which they do business, and things of that nature. So to my knowledge, now, the Sac and Fox tribe is the only tribe in the United States that has a regulation of mineral lessees, and it is directed toward that very end. Now, Brother Charles, now I would take some, there is some magic to these laws. There's great magic to these laws. And in the way that our Indian people see this, there is great magic in these laws. That most of the tribe, the Sac and Fox, have one of these, and for the record, I would identify this as the constitution and bylaws of the native village of Unaclete, which is this 4 or 5 page husk of a document, which is just some dead pieces of paper. But the power to exist, the power to function, the power to make laws and to be governed by those laws, the people of the native village of Unaclete breathe life into this. And that life can be breathed into these husks in a magical kind of a way. And these laws, as we look at them, they are just simply symbols that people make on a piece of paper. And the tribe, so to speak, because of the magic that its people have breathed into this husk, become a people of greater significance than they were the day before. And I think that much of this is the feeling of what is the nature of that relationship. There is magic in it. There is a need for responsible exercise of this magic. But there is magic. There is power. There is freedom. There is the interest in being a people and to be a people of some substance that is the part that is this. Because this is just a simple piece of paper. And the people of Unaclete breathe life into it. Now that's something very special that no other group of people of a minority status have in our country. Something of great significance to them. Now, the Sac and Fox have one just like this. And for years and years and years, they were told that they were nobody. They were told to be happy with what little income they had. And they were, I guess. I don't know whether they were or not. I can't get into their head. But one day they said that there are things that we need to do as a people that nobody else is going to do for us. And experts and people, I mean, the words. Let me give you an example. The law itself functions in categories. If you allow yourself to be branded as an off-reservation people, you are looking at terrible consequences. If I were you, I would allow nobody to tell me that I am an off-reservation people. Because that carries with it a whole triggering of certain kinds of activities. Because if I understand Cake versus Egan, is there just wasn't any. It wasn't a conscious choice to have one, and then there's some over here that's off. And if I understand ANCSA correctly now, and I probably don't, if that 40 million acres is not Indian country, it ought to be. Now, I mean, there's some reason for that 40 million acres being there. And if that's not Indian country, then it ought to be. And I think you ought to reject any theory that doesn't come up consistent with that 40 million acres being Indian country. And I guess the significance of that, in terms of the question that you ask me, is there is magic to it. And the magic is that there are people who who see themselves of significance, and they begin to move into complementary areas with other governments, because the Sac and Fox see the laws that they passed as being complementary to those of the United States in the overview of the lessees and in the protections of their tribal property. Now, I hope that makes some sense, because you need to be very careful. Let me give you an example of that. The Sac and Fox were a tribe that was that were called Oklahoma Indians. Now, the legal significance of Oklahoma Indians is they might as well call them the Kansas City Chiefs or the Atlanta Braves or somebody. But what it resulted in is a whole body of literature and non-Indian legal experts who branded the Sac and Fox out of business. And we begin talking about off-reservation, like their lands got up and walked out. Their property got up and walked somewhere. They said, oh, we're looking for an off-reservation place to be so we can be nobody. So that the categories of the law are extremely important to you, and don't think they aren't, because the law is served by categories and the facts that make up those categories, and they trigger off certain kinds of responses. So that if you stand still to being the old off reservations, whoever you are, well, that's going to have certain kind of legal significance. And I think that in the case of the Sac and Fox, most of those ideas have been eliminated. There's tremendous misunderstandings about what the nature of the tribe was and who it is, and it really boils down to what you think a tribe is. If you don't see a tribe as being very significant, then it won't be. If you see a tribe as a government of significance, then you will build it to be that. But if you don't see it as anything, you just won't be. It'll be nothing. And if you accept the definitions that are cast by people about it, that it's nothing, then it'll be nothing, because you won't act. Because the nature of this is abstract. Good parts of the law are in its very beginnings are metaphysical. And there's nothing more metaphysical than the notion that the people of Unaclete blew life into this. I mean, that's a metaphysical idea that becomes, and people then hook the abstraction of that into a practical exercise. And I think that that's something that all Indian people can understand because of the nature of the relationship that they have with the powers of the world, that this is another function of that. And I hope I haven't got completely off the point, but I wanted to take you from what I saw as being the specifics of the Sac and Fox Mineral Leasing Act and the Business Corporations Act, which requires any corporation that does business within their jurisdiction to register with the tribe and subject itself to the regulatory powers of the tribe, and secondarily to the Mineral Leasing Act, which regulates the lessor-lessee relationship, and which is also attached to the General Revenue and Taxation Act of 1982.
Well, good. Thank you, Browning. I think that I'm going to take advantage of my position as chairman to move on, because you've brought us to a point where I think I should call on Willie Kasayali to tell us what the people of Akiachuk, maybe somebody could lend you a microphone, Willie, are doing. And there are some people who had questions. Ralph, you had a question, and some others. I think we can weave those into the discussion as we move along. But Willie, go ahead and tell us what you folks are doing at Akiachuk and where you want to go.
Thank you, Commissioner Berger. We must have a lot in common with the Sac and Fox people down south, but as far as Alaska is concerned, we have this beast up here called the municipality. Last year, in 1983, the City Council submitted their resignation, and we didn't know who that resignations were supposed to go to. So the IRA council in our community assumed the responsibility of a government that the municipality had in our community. There's been a lot of discussions between Akichuk and the state government as to the legality of the dissolution process which has taken place in our community. Through the powers of the IRA government, we call for the election of our tribal membership, also the non-natives that were living in that community. A vote was taken whereby majority of the eligible voters voted to go ahead and dissolve the city and to transfer the property over to the tribal government. Through the existence of the municipality there, back when the things were happening, the state of Alaska ruled the election process that we had taken place illegal. In our views, we were doing the right thing because that was one of the powers that the tribal government in Akichuk had. There's been several dialogues that we have talked about within the parameters or vicinity of the villages around Akichuk. And there's a lot of unquestioned answers still existing. Last summer, we met with the three villages to form a unified government called the Yupik Nation. We do have membership on this organization from the three federally recognized IRA governments, namely Akichuk, Akak, and Tuluksak. Also, in these three villages, we have an existing contract with the federal government, namely to run our own schools through the 638 process. We have been notified by the Department of Interior that these schools will no longer be funded as of June 85. Whether these communities like it or not, we're supposed to be transferred over to the state system. These three communities, along with the two other villages from the coast, Chivac and Chafornik, we have opposed the transfer of our schools to the state system. We still want to maintain some kind of control of education because we view education as important for the existence of our people and to understand today's society and utilize what we learn through education. But number one thing, we cannot forget who we are. We need to educate our children of their culture, our language, our histories. By the action that the community took last year, I think we made the state aware of the tribal governments have been in existence in the state of Alaska. And in my mind, I think all the native communities of Alaska needs to reevaluate their priorities and look at the type of government which might be more compatible to their needs. Not in the sense of those communities becoming an IRA government, but in the sense of becoming an effective tribal government. IRA isn't the only tribal government that can work for these communities. There's also a traditional form of government which exists. We have been, since last year, in process of establishing our tribal ordinances, and we're also looking at establishing a tribal court. The state of Alaska has never been challenged as far as our rights as the native people within the state. Last year, during the United Tribes of Alaska's conference, or a year before, there was some talk of establishing a state tribal task force on sovereignty. At that time, we thought that task force would consist of the tribal governments in Alaska, but the membership of that organization or that task force is spread out now. And we opposed to it because we were saying that we didn't want any organization to come up with come up with something that they can deal with us. We wanted to present the state with our views on how the state of Alaska should deal with the native communities or the tribal governments. During our convention last summer, we made an agreement between the three village corporations located within the jurisdiction of the Upete Nation boundaries, and we identified lands where we like to assume jurisdiction over. And these lands that we identified were the Anska lands selected by the village corporations. We identified the native allotments. We identified the traditional lands where our people went hunting and subsistence for their survival, and also the historical sites. And we also identified the term Indian country as the basis for our jurisdiction of our tribal government. This land jurisdiction agreement that was agreed upon by the three communities, we still need to sit down and come out with ordinances. Also on the land issue, I think back in 1971 or somewhere in that area, there was a case that was brought into the courts, namely the Gustafson case versus Klawak. In that case, our village was one of the native town sites, and during the course of the proceedings of that law case, somewhere along the line, we were involved without our knowledge. And somewhere along the line, the Gustafson side lost their case against Klawak. And we were billed saying that this case was a benefit for our community. We were sent a bill where supposedly our interests were represented in that court case. Well, we didn't pay the bill that was sent to us, but Gustafson or his department went ahead and auctioned off two pieces of land supposedly to cover the costs of that case. These kind of things needs to be worked out with the local communities or the tribal governments, because like in our case in the village of Akichuk, we do have that similar constitution that Unalakleet has. And I think, I'd like to think that we blew a breath of fresh air into that organization to revitalize and to utilize that constitution to work for us. But right now, the state of Alaska does not recognize the tribal governments in the sense to receive state funding where we can provide adequate services for our membership. And it's not just membership that we're providing these services to, it's also to the non-native memberships that might reside in these communities. We've had several long discussions in several of our Upete Nation board meetings. Our discussions take us into early mornings where it's not just us young people that are coming out with these ideas, it's the elders that are also involved in those discussions also. If you think we're radical, you should come to our village meetings and listen to these elders talk. There was a mention of bingo games a little while ago. In many of our villages, we don't have a whole lot of dollars to play with where we can provide effective services to our people. In our community, we're looking at, we will be conducting hearings on whether to legalize gambling in our community. And that's a source that needs to be tapped. There are a whole lot of things that, ideas that we throw around between ourselves. And a lot of these things, in our views, the state of Alaska will fight us on the things that we come out with. But I think in our village, we recognize the number one thing of who we are. We're Alaska Natives. And we have our own cultures, and we have our own languages. We have our own histories. And it's not just the people in our region should look into these. The other parts of Alaska, like the Inupiat Nations, the Tlingit and Haida Nations, the Athabasca Nations, they need to sit down and talk with their people. We recognize today that there are three main entities within most of the communities. And these entities are fighting each other. And we'd like to think in our village we found a solution, and that solution was the revitalizing of the tribal government. I have a whole lot of things to say right now, but I'm kind of nervous, so I'm forgetting a whole lot of things here. On that education again, coming back to the education side, like I mentioned earlier, there's five of us villages that are putting the 638 law working for us under education, but the federal government is saying that as of June 85, they're going to withdraw federal funding, and whether we like it or not, we're going to be turned over to the state education system. Well, we oppose that, naturally. And we want to still maintain this, the control of the schools. By federal government getting out of education, we'd also say that the federal government is getting out of his trust responsibility of educating our people, or providing some trust responsibility to deal with the native people. And this scares us because it affects all the native communities in our villages in the state of Alaska. In many of the villages, there is very little understanding of federal Indian law. There might be experts like the roundtable here. I think we know in our minds what course of action our native people needs to take, but we need to go out to the communities and talk to those people out there. They're the ones that are affected by these dialogues that we're throwing back at each other today. I guess with that.
Could I ask you, Reed, you have a question?
Tom, I just wanted to ask, how long has the federal government been supplying funds for the schools in your village?
I'm not sure. I guess as far as contracting our schools, we're into our fourth year, but previous to that, the schools were run under the BIA system.
They were BIA schools, not state schools.
No.
And now the BIA is saying they're going to cut out any funding for your schools?
Yes.
Sounds like the makings of a good lawsuit.
Could I,
that just seems unbelievable.
Well, I think that's coming. The Willie, could I ask you about the idea behind all this? You said that you had three entities in the village at odds. I take it you mean the city government, the IRA council, and the village corporation?
Yes.
Well, you dissolved the city government, and the IRA has taken over its functions. You have an arrangement with the village corporation by which you said they agreed to put their lands under the jurisdiction of the IRA? What happened?
Well, the agreement was for the tribal governments to, namely, to enforce the trespass ordinances within the Anska lands, the corporate lands, because we're faced with a lot of non-natives coming into our lands without the permission of the corporations. I had heard some talk from some of the people around this table about forming some kind of state chartered organization to work along with the tribal government to receive state funding. I think by the actions of the village took by dissolving the city, we prefer to utilize the tribal government to deal with the state or the federal government. Now, if we look at the village corporations, these village corporations are also a state chartered organization, and what comes to my mind is, why not utilize this state Anska corporation to receive funding on behalf of the tribal governments from the state?
And let me ask you another question. When I was out in Akiachuk, and in that whole region, Southwest Alaska and Western Alaska generally, the main thing, just about the main thing that people talked about at my hearings was subsistence, restrictions on access to hunting and fishing. People felt they had been pushed back and they wanted to assert their right to the fish and game resources that they felt traditionally had belonged to them. Now, you didn't mention subsistence at all in your presentation just now, but could you tell me where that fits into this whole thing?
Well, under the Yupik Nation organization, those are some of the things that we're talking about. Like I mentioned earlier, the state has never really challenged the tribal governments in the courts. And one of the things that we're looking at under this organization is to establish ordinances to cover basically everything, also the subsistence side. I think our native people in the state of Alaska, when they're going through the state court systems in the areas of subsistence, there is no mention of any of the federal law cases, Indian law cases, in these state courts.
I think that Ralph Lerner.
I have a small question about something that's hovered around the margins of the discussion this morning. It's about BIA. When Mr. Ashenbrenner was speaking about it, it seemed to be some entity that many or some of the native groups had outgrown, you know, as though one graduates from high school and doesn't need that kind of stuff anymore. And the word that had come to my mind as I was listening to that discussion was a word that was later mentioned by Mr. Pipestem, namely discretion. This is a question, I don't know to whom to address it. Doesn't the discretion of the Secretary of the Interior remain under any of these IRA arrangements? And isn't that a discretion that's his?
Could I? Yeah,
let me answer this.
Yeah.
Very important question.
Use the microphone, would you, Spud?
Yeah, it's a very important question that he's just brought up, and something we probably should have more discussion on is the discretion of the Secretary of Interior. I think it's a misconception. He doesn't have that discretion. When you really look at the formation of Indian governments and that husk that Mr. Pipestem was holding up there, a lot of people view that backwards, that the Secretary of the Interior transfers or gives us those powers and authorities through that piece of paper, and that's completely erroneous and backwards. That husk and piece of paper is not them giving those powers to the tribal governments. It's more of a review process, because in most cases our laws can't conflict with the Constitution of the United States, and that's what he's really reviewing. That piece of paper is really the tribal members outlining the powers that they are giving to the tribal government. It's like when you charter a municipal government. You form committees and commissions and groups to draft the powers that you're willing to confer to that municipal government. Indian governments are no different. There are many, many forms of Indian governments. The feds wanted to kind of mold them into something that they could recognize, and they did that through the IRA acts and these pieces of paper, trying, if you read these across the nation, it looks like they were printed in a Xerox machine, and in those days they didn't have Xerox machines. But they sent out their agents to say this is what was good for us. And they really didn't explain the functions that the people, in most cases, were outlining the limitations of authorities that they were conferring to their own governments and then agreeing to live under those authorities that they were putting in those pieces of paper. So the discretion of the Interior is only to review to make sure that those don't conflict with the Constitution of the United States, because that's where the ultimate authority comes from. And we have many, many constitutions hung up right now in this process, because they know they don't have the authorities to hold or disapprove. They can review, but they right now, because of the Alaska situation, are just basically sitting on them, and they don't have that discretionary authority. And if they don't release them shortly, we'll probably end up in court to prove that point.
Another lawsuit. Mary Miller, you wanted to comment on this.
In regards to this discretion that is spoken of for the Secretary of Interior, it's not an unqualified discretion. And I think that's something that is admitted even by the Department of Interior. Any discretion that is exercised is supposed to be exercised on decisions that are made in the best interest of the tribal governments and the tribes. And that, to me, is not an unqualified discretion.
Yeah, all right. Ralph Lerner.
My question is prompted by enormous innocence and ignorance, one of the things that is reinforced, even with the slightest acquaintance with the history of federal Indian relations, and it's documented in spades in Mr. Johnson's summary account, is that government policy generally, and BIA in particular, has blown hot and cold over the decades and over the centuries. It gives, it takes, it knows what the left hand is doing, and sometimes it doesn't. And all this suggests to me a great vulnerability. To be sure, it's all done in the name of what would serve the interests of the people in whose care, for whom they are entrusted with certain care. But that's the other man's view of it, and that raises it would seem to me, a deeply disquieting aspect of the whole IRA route. I'm not saying that it's hence simply bad, but that it raises problems in my mind that the letter of the law doesn't answer, and the spirit that informs the administration of the law may be one way and may be t'other. That would be something that I'd worry about.
Sheldon.
Yes, as far as discretion of the Secretary of the Interior or any of his employees and or agents with regard to his dealings with any village that has an IRA, it's strictly written in the approval of the Constitution and bylaws, the approval section to which the Secretary of the Interior affixes his signature and seal. The very last sentence of that approval states, all officers and employees of the Interior Department are ordered. It doesn't say you are to interpret to your own discretion. You are ordered to abide by the provisions of said Constitution and bylaws. Now, another thing I think that has to be clarified with regard to the United States Constitution is whether or not this applies to Alaska's Native people and also American Indians. We, the people of the United States, did not include Alaska's Natives or the American Indian. And as far as that goes, the Constitution, which was approved by the Secretary of the Interior for the village of Unalakleet, states in its preamble that we, a group of Eskimos, make ourselves this Constitution and bylaws. And it also says under approval, all rules and regulations heretofore promulgated by the Interior Department or by the Office of Indian Affairs, so far as they may be incompatible with any of the provisions of said Constitution, will be inapplicable to the village of Unalakleet from and after the date of adoption of this Constitution. Now, if that's not broad-based enough, I don't know what is. But this says that anything that the Department of Interior does in any of the affairs that concerns this government, primarily, and what we're talking about now is land, they have to get consent of the tribe according to the powers of the villages listed under Article 4, which they have not done.
Well, I think that this is a good time to break. I would like to break for lunch and come back to what Willie Casaioli has been talking about, and then have Spud Williams talk a little bit about what's happening in the interior. It may be that the people of Akiachuk, in exercising these powers that they have assumed, will bump up against the Secretary's discretion. We might continue to bear that problem in mind as regards the question whether the American Indians and Alaska Natives are under the U.S. Constitution. I think that question has been settled, and in international law there may have been no sound basis for occupying this continent by the Europeans, but international law is one of those things where you have to have a court that will enforce it. And the courts in the United States enforce the laws enacted by Congress, and they enforce the Constitution of the U.S., and I think that's an interesting point, but I don't think we should detain ourselves on it. So why don't we come back at 1:30 and carry on?
Are you running off?
Yeah, get me later.
Okay, I will.
Good. I'd like to.